getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about how you can have a civilized divorce. I think that that's what most people want. They hope that their spouse will agree that the marriage is over, and then they can discuss parenting and finances as reasonable people who once loved each other. We all want to avoid the nastiness and the expense of a litigated divorce, and no one wants long, drawn-out negotiations that keep you locked in a state of limbo for months on end. Now, I've worked with people who have stayed in unhealthy relationships for many years because they were fairly certain their spouse would fight a divorce, and they didn't have the energy or the resources to face that. Sometimes staying in the marriage was the best choice that they could make to shield their children from the likely ongoing conflict. And in those cases, a litigated divorce may be unavoidable. But in other situations, a civilized divorce is absolutely possible. And my guest today believes there are multiple paths to that, and the key is being emotionally prepared to choose them. My guest is Sally Boyle. Sally is a certified financial planner and a certified divorce financial analyst with years of professional and personal experience guiding people through divorce. Welcome, Sally.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, Sally, in your introduction to your book, you say that divorce is not about winning, and that it's a decision made as two people that have grown apart. And when I read that, I thought, well, that's kind of where the problems start, because divorce usually isn't a joint decision. In my experience, I've heard stats that say in some 80% of cases, the decision is initiated by one party and the other spouse really has no choice but to go along with it.
That's absolutely true. In fact, you know, the statistics that I see, probably 2/3 of the divorces are initiated by the women in the relationship. And one of the things I try to counsel folks on is exactly that. You've made the decision, which means you've gone through what I see as an emotional cycle that anyone who suffers loss, and certainly the loss, the consideration of the loss associated with a divorce, goes through, which is anger, fear, blame, all of those emotions. And I try to caution people to understand that as soon as they say, "I'd like a divorce," to their partner, that starts that cycle for them. And so there is an emotional disconnect that takes a little bit of patience on the part of the person initiating the divorce to recognize that their partner is not in sync with them emotionally, to see that the anger that they might be witnessing or the blame that they might be witnessing from their partner is, in fact, a natural response that if they look backwards, maybe they were experiencing when they were trying to save the marriage or salvage it. Yeah.
Right. So I've heard the converse of that, too, is like the person who's just been told that their spouse wants a divorce, they often say, you know, she's not upset. She's not crying. She's just, it's also a matter of fact.
Right.
And that they struggle with that. And that's where I try to say to them, well, you have and try to understand that for your spouse, this is a decision that they've come to probably over the last several months, could be even years. And they have worked through this. As you say, it's a grief cycle. It's similar to the cycle that people go through when they, through the loss of somebody by death.
No, that's absolutely true. In fact, the final stage of that cycle, as has been, you know, defined by a number of experts, is exactly that, acceptance. You've done everything that you can. The person initiating the divorce probably feels like they've done everything that they can to try to communicate to their partner that they're struggling. They're struggling with their relationship. They're struggling with their marriage. And in doing that, they've probably had arguments. They probably fought with them. They probably blamed them for things. And, you know, they've gone through the fear of, I'm leaving, now what's next for me? But then the very final stage is acceptance. You just accept the fact that this is your decision. And in that acceptance, there's a calm that I think does drive the receiving party crazy. Like, how can you be so calm about this decision? Well, I've been through the cycle that, you know, I'm maybe just starting you on right now. And the final stage is acceptance, just a calm acceptance of the fact that you now are prepared to separate and to divorce. Yeah.
So, and you just mentioned separate there. And I think from my reading of your book, that's one of the suggestions that you have. As a way for spouses, for the person who's initiating the divorce, to give their spouse chance to work through the emotional cycle and to catch up, would be to have a physical separation.
Physical separations are things that I do favor if the party who is staying behind does not feel abandoned and it doesn't compromise your ability to communicate in a reasonable way. Because I think when we realize that we are divorcing, it is an extremely emotional time where mistakes can be made, emotional mistakes can be made. We say things we don't mean. We post things on social media that are unfriendly, things that we can't take back. And when you take a more long-range view, especially if you have children together, you're going to have a life together. So I feel like physical separations, if affordable, and that's usually the problem,
yes,
is can we afford to do it,
yes,
gives us enough space to maybe embrace our emotions if they're less than gracious from a distance, and gives us just time to think and to be calm and to try to approach calm. So I've always been a fan of physical separations if it is a possibility. Yeah.
Right. So, and the other thing that I think with a physical separation is that when there's children involved, it allows you to start practicing co-parenting together, figuring out a parenting schedule that works for your children, and kind of test out those things before you put something in writing.
You know, and it's true. I mean, I approach things somewhat from a financial standpoint, too, and it allows you to test those waters out, too, not just your custodial schedule or different custodial schedules before you settle in on one, but what does it feel like financially to be separate, you know, in terms of cost, in terms of expenses. So, yeah, I think it's really, really healthy to have a trial separation so that you can experience, both the emotional separation to try custodial schedules and to really understand what supporting two households feels like.
So when you, with your financial hat on, Sally, just for a moment then, so when you talk to people about doing a physical separation, do you advise them to actually talk through, like, how are you going to handle the money? Who, and then, like, each of you have to start paying the bills for your respective place where you're living so that you know, the party, if they haven't been handling the household accounts, can get used to that?
The unique piece for everyone's situation is exactly that, is who is the breadwinner, who is the primary breadwinner, exactly how do you separate budgets. Those usually are the most challenging decisions. And so quite often what we do in the initial separation isn't even going to be what is permanent for us.
Right.
We're usually renting a place. We're usually smaller than we maybe would typically choose to live in, on a permanent basis. But, I think it helps you test out budgets. I don't know how many conversations I actually have with people who are in the middle of trial separations that actually you know, work out the budgets together, because again, they're still emotionally a little raw and frustrated and angry. But I think it helps us even separately to come to the realization of what managing our own household is going to feel like financially. It helps us figure out some parameters and you know, expenditures. I mean, we have to then develop a budget and a separate budget. And usually, lots of times, people are very surprised at what supporting two separate households feels like, you know, in terms of change of quality of life.
And then just a small point here, I just want to make that a physical separation is not the same as a legal separation.
Correct.
Although I understand that there are some states that do require a physical separation before a divorce can be final.
But... Yes. Yes, there are. And you're right. People need to understand that they haven't taken a legal step. The difference between a legal separation and a physical one is a legal one actually establishes a point in time where their financial assets are frozen with respect to their divorce. That doesn't happen with a physical separation.
Right.
No. Right.
So, and something that you mentioned earlier is like this physical separation is great if the parties can afford it, but oftentimes they can't. So what's your suggestion for how you allow the other party to catch up, work through that emotional cycle when you're still living under the same roof?
I have had couples who have just occupied separate houses, separate spaces in their homes. And it's interesting. I think if the person who is initiating, the spouse who's initiating the divorce, is aware of where their partner is emotionally, I think it allows them to recognize that and to have some compassion for it, and to say to them, I am not trying to hurt you, and in fact, I understand exactly how you feel. I've been frustrated myself over the last couple of years. So if I choose to move into this bedroom or this separate section of the house, it's not to hurt you. It's to give you enough space to process what you're feeling right now. And I think that's important, that the communication between parties of recognition of what's happening emotionally and accepting it, you know, accepting your partner's responses when they're not what you'd like them to be, and instead of reacting to them.
Right.
But I think how you communicate that physical separation, even within your own home, is really important. If it's not done in a huff and I'm going back into this section of the room, you know, that's not it. You're doing it to give them the space that they need, and you communicate that.
And we're going to talk more about this after the break, but I'm thinking that during that, you know, that initial separation, whether that's a physical separation or just different places agreeing to different boundaries in your own home, maybe hold off discussions about what divorce looks like and what the division of assets look like until people of your other party has worked through some of those emotions.
I absolutely agree with that. You know, I really do. We don't start talking, and sometimes I even defer a conversation around an absolute custodial schedule in addition to the finances, because give yourself a month or two or more to before you start saying, I'm going to keep this, you're going to take that, I'm going to, you know what I mean? Just because those conversations can reignite those emotions. And I also caution people to say, when you start talking about who's going to keep the house, even if it's 3 months from now, you may see yourself go into the same emotional cycle. You may see your partner go into the same anger that maybe they've gotten over for the last 30 days. These cycles reemerge based on some of those conversations, because some of those conversations are really emotional, and both our finances and our kids can be triggers for that. And so, first of all, recognizing it, But at least if you're not doing it in the first week after you've let your partner know that you want a divorce, you're not piling those emotions and decisions on top of what I think is an already difficult time for the spouse who wasn't looking for a divorce. Yeah.
So maybe this process is going to teach patience as well.
Yeah, I think that's important, because you know, I've been through a divorce personally, and you need that patience. Trust me, after the divorce papers are signed, right? It's the patience of all the implementation of everything you agree to during the divorce. I think divorce is an ongoing exercise in patience.
Sally, we're going to take a quick break here. Listeners, I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce. And today we're talking about finding a civilized way through divorce. My guest today is Sally Boyle. Sally is a certified financial planner and certified divorce financial analyst with years of professional and personal experience guiding people through divorce. Sally is the author of Deconstructing Divorce, Taking the Mystery Out of Divorce and Its Impact on Your Family, Finances, and Future. Now, Sally, you're a financial expert, a numbers person, yet what we've been talking about so far and the central message of your book is focused on the emotional side of divorce. And I wondered if you would like to share with our listeners how you came to arrive at putting so much importance on the emotional side.
Well, I went through a divorce myself 18 years ago, and I was a financial planner at that time. I was in the financial services business, and as I looked back, I realized that I had made, even with my background, I'd made significant mistakes with regard to the financial choices that I made, not only at the time of my divorce, but you know, even going forward. And I realized it was because of my emotions. I was so nervous about the divorce. I was so scared about what custodial schedule would we end up with. I was a little intimidated by my now former spouse about how would my demands around finances impact his agreement on my custodial schedule. And so I realized that I made a lot of very important decisions at a time when I maybe was not emotionally at my best to do so. So I saw that, and I saw, you know, clients coming to me who were going through divorces, you know, before I wrote Deconstructing Divorce, and they were making the same mistakes, and not necessarily because they weren't intelligent, bright people, but because they were trying to make these decisions at a time where they were having emotional difficulties. You know, just addressing the issues of their divorce alone. And I want to say, even the person initiating the divorce will feel guilty. They'll feel emotional. I've seen women give things away, you know, at the time of their divorce because of feelings of guilt if they're the ones who initiated it. So I just feel that it was my personal experience that made me realize that this was a critical issue, not just in talking to people about finances and the legal issues associated with divorce, but also to help people understand how their emotions were impacting their decisions regarding finances and legal decisions.
It's so funny because we hear all the time about how you need to approach the financial negotiations as a business and kind of set aside the emotions, but it's really difficult to do that. I mean, the emotions just seem to be entangled in underlying so many things.
And I think that's because, again, we rush into this. When I say rush into it, we seem to feel that as soon as we make the decision that we want a divorce, that we've got to go see the attorney, we've got to start the legal process, we have to, and of course, then it takes on a life of its own, right? The attorneys tell you, well, I need your financial affidavit. I need you. What do you want to keep? What do you want? And I really feel that if we just recognize that we need a little bit of an emotional break. First of all, once we've made the decision, and second of all, immediately after telling our spouse, just give ourselves the time to take a breath, that we will, and recognize that that's exactly why we're doing it. I'm just convinced. I've had experience with many clients who just do that. You know, that's right. My recommendation. That's what they do. They make far better decisions, and their communications with their spouses during the divorce process are clearer, are just, you know, more empathetic. You know, just a lot of things happen that improve the decision-making if you get your emotions under control first, and you need some time to do that.
Right. What I've come to think about in terms of like your comment about hiring an attorney right away is that for years, maybe since the beginning of divorce, people go to attorneys for two things, and they don't realize it. What they're going to attorneys for is legal advice, which is the obvious thing, but then they're also going to attorneys to learn how to get divorced.
Yes, and again, a big reason for why I wrote Deconstructing Divorce is because I feel that when you go to an attorney, just like if you go to a surgeon, if that attorney has a litigation bias, that's what you're going to get. You're going to go right to court. If you go to a mediator, you'll get a mediation bias. So the intention of the book was to help people learn about alternative, what we call alternative dispute methodologies, and make a decision what they want to do first. What do I think sounds best for me in approaching my divorce? And then seek out the attorney, that attorney who is skilled at that particular process. So I think we don't want to go to an attorney with no knowledge about the divorce process at all. We want to educate ourselves so we know which process we'd like to utilize.
So it's like you learn how to get divorced. So that involves figuring out what the divorce process looks like where you live. So I mentioned earlier, I know there are some states that require a physical separation before the divorce can be final. That would be important to know, then understand the choices for working through the process, because we have a lot more now than just the litigation, getting clued up on the financial mechanics, and understanding what goes into a parenting plan.
Absolutely. And as you know, that is all governed really by your jurisdiction. The financial piece of it certainly is determined by the state in which you live. But here in New Hampshire, which is where I'm located, you know, there are very specific things you have to do in advance of developing your custodial schedule. You as a parent have to sit down and talk about parenting post-divorce. And so you do understand all of these requirements if you educate yourself in advance of filing or making decisions.
Right.
And your local family law division will spell these requirements out in detail for you. Sure.
So one of the other points that you make in your book, Sally, is that people can go wrong in educating themselves, though, too. And they can start by talking to friends and family members, and that can backfire and not be helpful. And you've seen that happen with your clients?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I always say the first record, we always, when we make a decision that we're going to go divorce, we say to a friend, so what attorney do you know about? And who do we hear about? We always hear about the, what I call, you know, the kind of celebrity divorces. Oh, well, this guy is really tough in court, and he got a lot of money for his, you know, he gets a lot of money for his clients. And that's the first thing we do. We ask friends, we get that sort of, and that's how they feel that we should be measuring the results of our divorce by how much did you get. Well, that's, to me, the wrong measurement. And in my experience, that's been the wrong measurement for clients who that's their focus. So, but how did we get there? We got there by asking our friends and family what they thought we should do, and they're not the ones who are experienced or skilled at it. It's really going to people who have significant experience in divorce. It's therapists, it's financial advisors, it's someone similar to yourself who does divorce coaching, and it gives us the time and the information to allow us to make decisions based on facts rather than recommendations made by people who are not experienced in the divorce arena,
right,
which you're usually our family and friends.
Right.
So.
And I've had clients even very recently who said, you know, she was trying to weigh up whether she should return to work, and she's not sure if she's going to get divorced, but she's saying, I'm an empty nester. I want to go back to work. But these two friends of mine are telling me I absolutely shouldn't because it'll spoil the spousal support and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And
right.
So she and I talked about that. And I think she's going to start looking for a job because that's what the decision is right for her. And part of what I wanted to say to her is what happened to your friends isn't necessarily what's going to happen in your case. And they got divorced 10, 15 years ago. The landscape has changed now.
You know, that's absolutely true. And you're right. Everyone's individual circumstances are completely unique. And what the legal system would look at in my situation would be very different from what they would look at in your situation. And it's all driven by our personal circumstances, which is why we really can't take advice from people who have had a singular experience, their own divorce. It may not look anything like yours. And one of the things that I think people are surprised at is how the court system has changed. How the court system looked at divorces 20 years ago is very different than today. So if you're advisor's experience is 20 years old, that's about how accurate it's going to be in today's day.
Right.
We wouldn't take a 20-year-old investment recommendation, would we? You know, we would, right? So, no, we would ask for something more current, and that's why, again, you want to be with people who are skilled and active in the field. Sure.
Well, Sally, we're right up on time, and I was wondering if you had one more tip, a little piece of advice for our listeners on how they can find their pathway to a civilized divorce.
You know, again, I always feel that education, however you get it, with regard to divorce and the process, I mean, to me, knowledge is power. It gives you the power to take control of your own decisions. And so educate, 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 however you get your information, whether it's through a book like mine or through your local resources in the family law division, just educate yourself before you go forward to anybody else so that you know the questions that you need to ask and you have the information that you need in order to make a good, qualified decision going forward. Yeah.
Thank you, Sally.
My pleasure, Mandy. Thanks very much for having me.
And thank you for working to get the message out about having a civilized divorce and helping to make a positive difference in the way that we end our relationships.
Yes, and you too. Your work is important. Thank you.
Listeners, we've been talking today about finding your way to a civilized divorce with financial expert and author Sally Boyle. Sally's book is Deconstructing Divorce, Taking the Mystery Out of Divorce and Its Impact on Your Family, Finances, and Future. And in here, you'll find Sally's suggestions for a civilized divorce, as well as helpful information about the different legal processes and an overview on financial negotiations. As a culture, divorce has been constructed as bad, negative, ugly, and lots of other negative adjectives. And that doesn't help us navigate through this life event in a healthy way. Sally Boyle has shared some excellent suggestions for ways that you can change this. And I'd like to add one other suggestion, and that is that you think about what a good divorce would look like to you. Now, sometimes when I say good divorce, people raise their eyebrows, because those are two words that don't usually get together, go together. But I would encourage you to start thinking about this as soon as you know that divorce is in your future. If you could have a good divorce, what would it mean for your relationship with your children, with your soon-to-be ex, with your finances, to your emotional well-being, to how you and your soon-to-be ex parent together? What would it look like a year from now, in 5 years from now, in 10 years from now? There are going to be many decision points as you work through the process of ending your marriage. And at each of these, you will be faced with choices. And you can go back to your vision of a good divorce and ask yourself which of the choices will take you closer to your vision and which ones will take you further away. And do share your vision with your soon-to-be ex and ask them what a good divorce would mean to them. I want to thank you for listening. Remember, you can get a synopsis of the show at my blog, sincemydivorce.com. I'm Mandy Walker, and I hope you'll join us next time for more conversations about divorce.